Speakers, Bill Crawford on ESPN 1400.
Well, good evening, everybody. We are back at the Antlers. It's snowing out. It must be time for the Laker Hockey Show. This is about the fourth straight week. We've had a snowy Monday evening here, but Damon Witten's with us. Tough weekend, Coach. This is getting old. Last weekend, a couple shutouts. We come on here and have to talk about losing two at home to a very good Minnesota State team. Now we go and play at the Engelstad Arena, which had to be a great experience for our players, but really tough losses because, man, I listened to most of that game Friday night, in fact, all of it, and I thought you had your first victory coming up over a top-ranked team right there. It was 3-0 in the second period, 4-1 late in the period, and all of a sudden the roof falls in. We end up losing 7-4, and then you come out on Saturday night, play a really strong defensive game, and 1-0 late in the game, and fall by a score of 3-1, two more losses.
Yeah, I was surprised early in the week. I asked the guys who would play at North Dakota before, and nobody did it. So to me, it was surprising. You know, I've been in the WCHA for quite a while now, so we've been in that arena, and we played that team quite a bit and had some success down there. So it was definitely a new environment for our guys. You know, for those of you who have never caught a game there, it should be on your, if you're a college hockey fan, put it on your list because it's 12,000 people. It's a beautiful arena. So it was a good experience for us. I think we're a better team today now going through that, and we'll talk about some of those items. But certainly, you know, I thought Friday was maybe the toughest loss of the year to have the lead you mentioned, to be up 3-0, to go up and then have a response. They make it 3-1. We come right back, make it 4-1. I think it was about 6 minutes left in the period or 7:20 or something like that. And you're in a good shape on the road against a great team and the best D-Corps in the country by far. Their defensive core is just phenomenal. And to have that ripped away and that environment was difficult. It was, like I said, I think the worst loss of the year, very difficult. And, you know, you're really worried as a coach what your response is going to be the next night. How do you push back against a team like that in an environment like that with a loss like that? And so there was some encouragement there on Saturday, the way we played. I thought Saturday was maybe the best game, the best 60 minutes we put together. Certainly with our attention to detail defensively was the best effort we had. You know, so there were some positives on the weekend, but certainly, you know, still a disappointing weekend as we continue to figure out how to win hockey games and get going here a little bit.
Yeah, it's very difficult right now because we knew this was going to be a tough year. We got started late with guys this year. We have a lot of new players. We have new coaching staff. Everything's lined up to be tough and not a lot of returning talent there. But this is one of the more difficult starts we've ever had in Laker hockey history. 2002-03, we started 3-14-1. 2007-08, we were 2-12-4 out of the gate. Right now, we're 3-15. So it's right there with some of the toughest starts we've ever had. And it doesn't get easier. We got to go to Ferris State this weekend. That's a tough team. We'll talk about them a little bit in a minute. Let's go back and talk about these two games at length. I wasn't there, obviously, which just about killed us not to be a part of it, but, you know, that's just such a devastating loss on Friday night because everybody got excited. I was getting all sorts of texts and messages and emails from people as I was listening to it while I was watching television there, watching college hockey on the tube, and everybody was fired up. The Lakers are up 3-0. It's 2-0, 3-0. Hey, it's 4-1, you know, and it's getting late in the second period.
Yeah, no, I mean, no question. And like I said, for those of you who were able to watch it or some of our fans that were there, it was great hockey. I mean, people in the building, you know, it was a great hockey game. You know, obviously we're on the wrong end of it. So your heart gets ripped out a little bit there at the end. But, you know, we went in there and, you know, we're not trying to just hang on and win hockey games. You know, we're building for the future. You know, we're building for tomorrow. We're building for a year out, 2 years out, whatever. We're playing the way we play. And we went in there, we were able to do that. You know, we weren't just trying to hold on and win a hockey game. We tried to initiate things and get after them. And we were able to do that offensively on Friday night. And, you know, it's a process to learn how to do some of that. You know, we've talked about our youth in some areas as well. And, that response was difficult for us to handle. You know, so there were positives, there was learning experiences for sure, but yeah, they just got going. And, you know, for those of you who were able to watch and you watch Jordan Schmaltz on the blue line, first round draft pick, I mean, there's a reason he's a first rounder. I mean, just a special, unique talent, as good of a defenseman I've seen in college hockey going back to Wisconsin's heydays there recent heydays, with the blue line they had, I think six drafted guys, first or second rounders, and Golubev Smith, the Detroit draft pick there. Just a unique talent. And five of their six defensemen are all draft picks. I think a first rounder, second rounder, third rounder. And they were able to literally take the game over. Schmaltz almost single-handedly, and just a unique talent. And, you know, we don't have that probably one guy who can just take a game over right now on our roster. And, you know, it was a disappointing response to not be able to, stem the tide a little bit and push back a little bit more to fight and claw a little bit. You know, again, it was a loss that rips your heart out a little bit. And that's why that Saturday was such a concern, because I thought there was, you know, we definitely could have really tanked and fell apart there a little bit with that loss. But it was a good response for us on Saturday.
No, on Saturday night, did you come out intentionally playing a defensive style? Was it your intent to just shut down North Dakota, don't let them free, make sure we play defense ahead of offense here? Because it stayed 1-0 till late in the hockey game.
No, you know, that's been one of the frustrating things, Bill, is, you know, looking back to the Mankato weekend and the Fairbanks weekend, we've had one weekend where we've been way too loose defensively, or one night, we've been way too loose defensively, and the next night we're like, oh yeah, you know, this is our structure, this is what we're supposed to be doing, we kind of get back to it. So, there was no change or emphasis in what we're doing, but there was certainly a lot Saturday morning in teaching about how we do it and when we do it right, how successful we are, and how it looks. So, and I thought our guys responded well. I thought, it was a real good weekend that way for our guys. The amount of time we spent Saturday morning talking about what we want to do, how we want to defend, and what it does when we're successful. We could show the guys clearly on Friday night, first period, stretches the second period. When we do it well, you know, we didn't give them a whole lot. And then when we get away from it, or we break down mentally or fatigue-wise and don't get to where we want to be, it led to some easy offense and some easy looks for them. So to come out Saturday didn't change what we wanted to do. You know, we still want to defend by possessing the puck and being aggressive on the forecheck and things like that. But when we are in our zone, when we do have to defend, and we'll do it against good teams certainly, to limit what we give them and to not let them switch sides and do some of the things we were good at, it was a great effort. And our guys had bought in. They did a great job Saturday night executing that, blocking shots, best of the season. So there was a lot of good things, but no, it wasn't a shift away from, hey, we're not going to play or press or do that. That's what we are. That's what we're going to do. And, you know, we'll get better. We'll continue to grow that way. But it wasn't a big change in terms of what we want to do.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things here is that these last four games have been against two of the top teams, not only in the league that we play in, but in the country too. You're looking at Minnesota State, Mankato now tied for the lead in the WCHA with 20 points, tied with Michigan Tech for first place. And, North Dakota, we're going into the weekend. They're number one ranked in the country, right up there in the pairwise. That's two really tough tests in a row. That's the kind of thing, even though you lose those games, can make you a better hockey
yeah,
team.
Yeah, well, no question. I mean, we talked about it Saturday after the game. You know, as much as it still hurts to lose, we were a better team after that Saturday game. I thought a bye week was – we needed a bye week going into it. It was tough, you know, first half and travel, everything we've done. But I'm really glad we went down there. I'm really glad we had the Saturday night we had. I think it'll make us a much better team. Does that mean we're going to win every game from here on out? Probably not, but we're a better team for that. And I thought the Mankato weekend, we probably saw the best 12 forwards we're going to see anywhere in the country. And I thought this past weekend, we saw the best decor we're going to see anywhere in the country. So, you know, we're a better team going through that. Now it's got to come together a little bit more and more consistently, but it's good. And I think there's probably people sitting out there saying, and I think maybe we're a little bit crazy as coaches. I think we could change things and maybe have more success today and pull things back and be, you know, more rigid or more passive, whatever you want to call it. And we went through the same thing at Michigan Tech. You know, we kind of kept saying, do we need to change it? Do we need to do this to be maybe more successful today or tomorrow? But there's a process in place, and there's a place we're trying to get to. And we keep saying as a staff, you know what, this is what we are. This is who we're going to be. And we're going to play this way, and we're going to keep getting our guys in better condition and keep upgrading some areas and go through it. And hopefully we have that same blueprint in place that Michigan Tech has to be where they're at now. So, you know, could we have more success today by changing things? Yeah, probably. We probably could, but that's not our makeup. That's not where we want to be or how we want to get there. So we want to stay with what we're going to do, and we think it's going to pay large dividends, you know, at some point here moving forward.
Is it a problem at this point that this team, and not really a problem because you knew what you were getting into when you came and you tried to make some of these changes, but I think this team was more or less recruited by the past staff to play a different style than what you wanted to play. Has that been is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I mean, I think so, and it's nothing on the players. I mean, I think they've done a lot of good things, and you look at our youth and inexperience in some areas. But yeah, I think you see it with some of the returning players. You know, there's just a total change in style of play has been a difficult adjustment for some players. And you see some of that by some defensemen who are playing at forwards. And you see some of that by some guys who had big years that haven't been able to replicate that because we're asking them to get outside the comfort zone and to play with pace and to get after it. So, yeah, I mean, and again, the exact same thing we went through at the other school I came from before here. It really has a lot of, similarities to what we went through there and what they've gone through and the style they played, the type of player they recruited, and that's fine. But it takes time for them to understand what we're asking for our conditioning to improve and to be able to play 60 minutes at the tempo we're trying to play with. So that's definitely, I think, part of the issue. And again, we've seen some gains you probably don't see in our record, but we're, I think, a much better team than we were a month and a half or 2 months ago.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. And it's just that you can't walk in against Minnesota State, Mankato, and North Dakota and expect this is going to be easy. That's why I got so fired up on Friday night when it got up to 4-1 late in the second period. I'm thinking, hey, man. And the other positive thing I think that came out of that game, even though it's a tough loss where you had the lead and couldn't hold on, guys scored goals who have not been scoring. That's big deal to me. I mean, Gus Coriale gets his first of the year. Mitch Nardi gets on the board. That's his first goal. And Kyle Chatham, who's played so well for you defensively, gets a big goal. Gets you started 1-0.
Yeah, I believe everybody, first goal of the year, right? Everybody scored that night. So that's good. You know, we're obviously not a high-powered offense, so the more by committee we get, the better off we are. Those of you who watched Saturday night just saw Gus had a wide open net to make it a 1-1 game, and that was a tough break too. But, yeah, you know, there's things moving in some good ways, and to get that offense from different people's good. Hopefully, it ignites some people. You know, Gus has done a great job for us in a lot of areas. He's played a big role. He's got a lot of opportunities, so we'd like him to contribute more and continue that offensive output. Probably on the Saturday night game, we'll talk a little bit more about Kyle Chatham and our decor. But you know, what a quiet season he's had. But I mean, when we get home here finally mid-January, watch Kyle Chatham and watch the consistency he plays with, the strength he plays with, and, really a quiet kind of hidden kid, but he's been dynamic for us. And for him to get that first goal is nice to see as well.
Do we play again at home this season, or are we just going to play on the road all year?
It doesn't feel like it, does it? And then I was just looking, it's only one series in January as well. So it's frustrating that way.
I think this is a really, really tough schedule. I think it's why the radio station chose not to send the broadcast crew on this last trip, because quite frankly, it's becoming tremendously expensive to do all this stuff. And it's because of this away schedule. It's just so tough. And there's no free ride here. So it gets to be more and more difficult, but we will be at Ferris State this coming weekend. And let's switch gears, talk a little bit about the Bulldogs here, and we'll take our break in just a moment. But you played a really good offensive team 2 weeks ago, really good defensive team this past weekend in North Dakota. Now you're going to run up against one of the best goaltenders, if not the best goaltender in the country, in C.J. Mott. And Ferris State's tough. They don't allow very many goals.
Well, I'm going to back you up one sec. Sorry, Bill, but just reflecting on Saturday night real quick. First period, Spratty got hurt.
Yes.
So we lost Spratty early in the first period. So we end up rolling five defensemen on the road at the number one team in the country, 12,000 people, four of them are freshmen. And, to have that effort, it might have been their season low shot total. And just, I thought, a real gutsy effort by our guys. You know, Draplick really manned up, played a great game. I thought he took a step this weekend. Mentioned Chatham already. He was very good. Aiden Wright continues to do it. Ryan Renz is in there as well. So,
what is the situation with Spratty's injury? Is that a serious injury?
He's out for a few weeks. So, if we had to leave today, we wouldn't have a full healthy roster. So that's, that injury bug that talked about the travel,
right.
The one bye, and it's been a long first half. So, we've really got the injury bug here, a little bit of illness. We're getting one or two guys back, it looks like, potentially. But we're definitely short man. So I thought Saturday our decor and Gordy did a really, really great job against, a great team.
Yeah, Gordy has he's a good goaltender. He's done a great job for you. I thought he did a good job against Minnesota State Mankato on Saturday. He did it again this past weekend on Saturday night. Had a little difficulty there late in the second period on Friday night, but that seems to be his MO. There's sometimes when he'll allow one and then there's two, three right, all of a sudden, and I don't know if that's a collapse on the defensive course part or if he loses concentration or something, but for the most part, that kid's done a good job. He's a 21-year-old freshman. He's a very good player.
Yeah, and that you mentioned, there's kind of, we had another similar to an old school, like one soft goal a game, and I didn't think he had that on Saturday, but Friday, I think it was their second goal, was not a great goal, it was Saturday. It was Saturday night, and Gordy, even watching on the bus on the ride home, said, "Coach, I got to apologize right now before you watch it." And yeah, we've got to get that one goal out of your game, but he's done a good job. And, you know, we're asking a lot from him and our goaltenders playing behind such an inexperienced D-core. And, you know, the hard part when you're offensively challenged, you don't have that wiggle room to maybe help your goalie out when he gives up a soft one. So you really put a lot of pressure on a young goaltender, and probably not entirely fair, but that's the situation we're in.
Okay, we're going to have Matt Johnson joining us here tonight in the second half of our show. We're going to take our first break of the night on the Laker Hockey Show. We'll be right back. We'll talk about Ferris State on ESPN 1400.
Now let's go back to the Antlers Restaurant as the Laker Hockey Show continues with your host Bill Crawford on ESPN 1400.
Alrighty, we are back at the Antlers on a snowy Monday evening in Sault Ste. Marie. Bill Crawford, Damon Witten, Matt Johnson's going to join us in the second half of the show tonight. And Damon, let's talk a little bit more about this North Dakota series. One of the questions that I had that I don't have with me right at this moment, but there was a call that the Fighting Sioux scored a goal late in the hockey game on Saturday night, and it came after a delay of game penalty. And I think, as the color man on the broadcast was explaining it, the penalty was called because the officials thought you were trying to sneak players out on the ice after an icing call, and he said he had warned you about it earlier in the game, so he called a delay of game penalty against you. Is that as accurate as to how he called it?
Yeah, pretty close. And I, you know, even going back, their first goal, I guess I want to be careful somewhat how I say it, but I thought, you know, flip teams, and I don't think they call it a goal. There's a new point of emphasis also making making sure your goaltender has the space to initiate and make a save. And if anybody saw the goal, there's a guy that moved upon his own accord right in front of Gordy, and his rear end was literally in Gordy's face, and he couldn't get his hands up to make the save. So I thought he impeded Gordy's ability to make the save. They reviewed, called it a goal on the ice, I believe, and then reviewed it, and they let it stand. I didn't like that. And if you literally saw it, it hit the guy's jersey. I think it sat on top of Gordy's head before falling down his back and trickling over the line. And that's kind of our puck luck. But I thought that was, not the right call on that, because Gordy didn't have the ability to make the save. And then you did describe it properly. I think all year, I think we've had one warning. In any game we've been in, not just for our team, but either team, there's a new point of emphasis in not delaying. You know, you ace the puck and four guys jump on and four jump off, and you buy some extra time to get rested. Well, I think in all the games we've been involved in, I've seen one team warned. And so that's a lot of hockey, one team warning. We did get one early, thought it was marginal. And then on the actual play that happened, when you watch it back, I mean, realistically, they're defensemen, you know, they're smart players, they do a good job. They really take away from their skating to let the puck trickle down and trickle down. Had he not stopped skating, he would have easily played it. So, you know, on the bench, we're all thinking it's going to get waved. We're saying no ice, no ice, because the defenseman's going to get there. So I thought it was a very close call. And, so, you know, your players are playing hard because you think there's no icing, it's getting waved off. So they jump on and they do that almost before the linesman called it. He had already called the penalty on us for doing that, where he had a timeout available. We would have easily used our timeout, put fresh troops out there, and no big deal. So you're sitting here in a one goal game with 4 minutes left in the game, and they call a penalty like that. I've not seen it called all year. I think somebody said Andy Murray's had one called on him at Western Michigan, so maybe there's been two all year in college hockey. They decided to call one in the third period with 4 minutes left in a one-goal game. I thought it was an awful call. I thought it was an embarrassing call for that crew, and you know, to not let the players decide a game like that, I thought was a shame.
Well, one of the big things, too, is North Dakota, most of its offense on the weekend came off the power play. I think they had 5 power play goals in 8 or 9 chances on the weekend, 2 on Saturday night.
Yeah.
That's the game.
That's the difference, yeah. One goal game, and now you got a face-off, pulled goal, your chance to tie it up or whatever. So, yeah, just a total shame. And, you know, we certainly had chances early, and our special teams obviously is I don't even know a kind word to try to use for that. Our special teams is a disaster, basically. So both sides of it, and you know, that cost us. We had our chances on the power play to cash in and make it a game, and at the same time get a kill or two, and we weren't able to do that. We made some adjustments Saturday night, and we were a little bit better earlier. I give a lot of credit to that D core because you know, I just think they've got guys again. That'll be the best D core we see all year, hands down. They're just an extremely dynamic group back there, and we put Schmaltz up there, and he can do a lot of things, and Pullman was very good as well, so we really struggled with that.
Yeah, the Lakers have, just for the record, the numbers are here, their power play is the worst in the nation right now. It's 6.2%, 59th among 59 teams, and the power play, or the penalty kill, is not a lot better. It's 57th among 59 teams. Now, you look at this weekend's opponent, Ferris State, they're 20th in penalty kill, and that's their goaltender, CJ Mott, who I'll talk about here because he's as good as there is. They are number 10 in the country in goals against, 1.93 a game. The Lakers right now are at 4.00 in goals allowed per game, and that's way too many. And when you compare it to Ferris State, you look at the Bulldogs as being a strong favorite this weekend, yet I think Lake Superior can beat them and play a top-notch game. You can beat Ferris State.
Well, yeah, we have to play top-notch every night to, in order to be successful, and that won't change. You know, we talked about Mankato's forward group and how dynamic they were, and then the North Dakota D group. Now we get Mott, one of the top goaltenders in the country. So, yeah, you know, we're seeing different strengths every weekend. But you know what? I mean, we've done a good job to go in there and put four in the net Friday night. It was good. And, you know, we kind of every week revisit some of the things that make us successful in terms of funnels and jams and some of those areas. And when we go out there and execute at that level, we do a good job and create offense. So it'll be the same. You know, you've got to have traffic in front of Mott. But he's definitely a difference maker and a huge challenge this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough series, and yet it's one where the Lakers can get a victory here, maybe even two. You got to play really well to beat them. Mott's the key. You got to get chances, and you got to score on your chances. I know this team works hard every week. I watch enough practice to know that penalty kill and power play are big deals. We work on them all the time. It's not like we can spend 10 minutes in a practice once a week or something. There's hours goes into this every week in preparation. What's the situation when the power play just can't get it done? Is there a talent deficiency here? Is it the style of play? Is it because we're instituting new ways of doing things all the time? What is the big problem here with the power play?
Well, that's a good question. If we knew the answer, we wouldn't be sitting there. Yeah, I mean, we continue to evaluate. I mean, I certainly think it's a piece of all those things. You know, we've rejiggered it a couple times, and I think this is another good week to do it. You mentioned the opponents. They've certainly had a little piece to do with that as well. You know, I think part of what we certainly lack is that we lack it, or we're just so young back there, but we'd really like to find a defenseman who is an elite power play quarterback. And it's a very special skill and talent. You see with one of our groups, we've got Ciotti up top the last couple of weeks because we do lack some of that. You know, Draplick was up there early in the year. I think he's a little bit better off to the side where he played last year. He's certainly more comfortable there, and he'll tell us that and tell you that. But we might have to get him back up top. Jimmy Roll does some good things, but you're asking a freshman to go out there and in a bigger, faster, stronger game and to quarterback that unit. So, we have some personnel challenges. You know, obviously as coaches, we've got to do a lot better job of finding the right players to put in the right places. And I think a lot of it, we just have to simplify as well. I mean, we've got to really dumb down the power play and get a puck to the net and bang and crash away And penalty kill, you know, penalty kill's tough because we've done some good things. I think, you know, Pete came from Mercyhurst. They led the country last year in shorthanded goals. He ran the unit there, and they were very good at Michigan Tech. I think we were fifth in the country in shorthanded goals, and we had a good unit, I think top 10 or 15 nationally. So we like some of our ideas, and I think part of it might go back to the style of play a little bit. You know, we're trying to be very aggressive and to score shorthanded and to pressure and take away time and space, and you know, our guys aren't quite comfortable there yet, so we've got to do a better job teaching that and then decide if we have the personnel to do that.
Injuries are starting to mount up on this team, too. We talked about Pete Spratty a few moments ago. We've had various people in and out. We started the season with Chris Ciotti missing two or three. I think it was 3 weeks he missed before he came back at Huntsville. He's been very good since. What is the injury situation right now? How many players do we have on the shelf? I noticed on Saturday night, Daniel Vernacci got a chance to play. At least that was the announcement, yep, that he was playing regularly. So we're getting guys in there who haven't been playing.
Yeah. No, and, you know, and Dan, we've asked guys to earn it, and he's done a good job. Now he's also got a good opportunity because of the injuries. And so Dan went in and played pretty well in some limited minutes, but did some good things for sure. We're banged up. Like I said, we might get one guy back tomorrow. Ian Miller is cleared to practice again, but he's been off for 2 weeks now. So we'll see how quickly he can get his game legs underneath them, you know, with finals week and a little bit of a non-traditional week of practice. But we will get Ian Miller back, which is nice. Jason Bird's another one that's coming off the questionable list. And he's to progress, then he should be potentially available for the weekend. But we'll have a couple of guys still out. So we might be able to dress a full roster, but we'll be real close, and we probably won't know until Thursday when we travel if we'll be able to take 22 healthy bodies.
Yeah, and you look at this team, Ferris State relies on goaltending. We mentioned Mott a couple of times here. C.J. Mott, his record right now is 7-7-1. His goals against average is 1.82. His save percentage is .936. Those are really, really good statistics on a team that's kind of middle of the pack right now and kind of 500 overall. certainly not C.J. Mott that's the problem.
No, I mean, he's been dynamic in our league for a few years now. So he's a veteran goaltender. You know, he knows how to play in that rink. It's a little bit different. The things happen so quickly there because of the ice size and in the structure of the rink there. But, you know, he's a challenge. I mean, if not the best goaltender in our league, certainly right there with anybody in our league. So, you know, that's a big part of game planning. How do you get to Mott and what do you do to be successful? And a lot of it comes down to, you know, we've got to generate more offense and more shots. You know, if you put 25 shots on Mott, then your chances to be successful really are reduced. So, you know, we'll have our hands full solving him a little bit. And, you know, they're a team, you mentioned some of those numbers, and that was with the one outbreak of offense. So their numbers are even a little bit less beyond that one weekend where they really exploded for some goals.
Yeah, they're a load in there. Last season, our fans might remember, we went there right at the end of the year. We had to have a victory to get into the tournament in the WCHA and lost 2-1 twice to C.J. Mott. And believe me, I was there. Lakers outplayed them in both games, had chances. He robbed us left and right. And we wound up on the outside looking in, even though we played pretty well. So, you know, that can happen.
Well, he's done that to a lot of teams. You weren't the only team, and, you know, that doesn't change for a lot of people. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I certainly think the year they've had that they know that that's their strength, and then they want to play to that strength. So, that's a big focus of ours this week, you know, juggling the demands of schedules and studying is spending some quality time with our forwards to generate that offense and to be successful, you know, to get to Mott and to score, create some offense.
Okay, we've got a couple of comments here. We don't really have a question tonight, but we do have a comment here that Jeff Jackson had a terrible year his first year at Notre Dame when he took over. His team did not win a lot of games. That's true. They're not winning a tremendous number of games this year, although they did get a sweep on the weekend. Season after that first year, they were in the NCAA tournament. That Lake Superior can do that same thing.
Well, that'd be a good track record, you know. Like I said, you know what, as tough as it is at times, you know, we feel good about a lot of areas. You know, we like the direction we're headed, you know, for tomorrow and for a month from now and a year from now. So, you know, don't lose faith. Stick with us. I know it's not fun and it's not enjoyable. And believe me, our kids are not enjoying that record looking at us in the eyes every day. But there's progress. There's a plan in place. And again, you always look back at your own situation and circumstances. But I've been with some great coaches. You know, the program we put together across the UP there, you know, I know that we know how to do it, and I know we're on our way to executing it, and it hasn't happened as quickly as we'd like, but there's progress being made, and, you know, just remain patient and remain faithful with us, and we appreciate everybody's support.
Okay, we're going to take a break. It's our second one of the night. We have three breaks every Laker Hockey Show. Matt Johnson is going to join us here in the second half of the show when he gets here, and we'll be right back with more from the Antlers on ESPN. All righty, we're back for our third segment, and for the first time in a couple of weeks, we've got a Laker hockey player with us, which is always nice, and Matt Johnson joining us. Matt is a sophomore at Lake Superior State, and playing on a line this season for the most part with Chris Ciotti at center and Bryce Schmidt on the other side. I think he's on the right side. That would put you on the left side. And that's been a pretty dynamic line. I don't know how much got done at North Dakota because, unfortunately, I wasn't there to watch. But I heard your names a lot, so I would assume that you played quite a bit. And those were interesting games. But how do you like playing with Ciotti and Schmidt at this point in the season?
I love it. I mean, Ciotti, obviously being a senior, brings a lot of, like, dynamic to our line, I think. And Schmidty, you know, every night he's going to work his heart out, like, everything. Straight line player, he's going to do everything right. So it's great.
Yeah, we should get Bryce to come back here and get on the air with us tonight, too, because he's in the building. But it'd be interesting. I think he's the only North Dakota native we have on our team. So he was going home to play at the Engelstad Arena. And that had to be a big deal for him. It had to be a big deal for a lot of you guys. When's the last time you've seen 11,000 people watch you play?
I can't name a time. I mean, it was definitely an experience I'll never forget in my life. And I'm glad. I know Schmidt and I are great friends, and he had a ton of family, and I thought we played hard, and it was awesome that I got to experience that with him.
You know, it was incredible. I said that earlier on the show here tonight and with Coach Witten. I sat at home, and it kills me not to be a part of Laker hockey, but after all these years. But there are times when you've got to do what the boss says to do, so we didn't go. But you built a 3-0 lead in the second period, and I'm thinking, you know, this is finally these guys are going to – they're guys scoring who haven't been scoring all year. Gus Coriale's got a goal. Chatham's got a goal. and Nardi picked up the fourth goal for you, put you ahead 4-1. I thought this is going to be it, and then the roof fell in late in the second period. And, you know, that had to be devastating for you guys, too, because you were probably feeling pretty good about yourselves.
Yeah, we were feeling great. And, I mean, once that crowd got fired up when they started chipping away at the lead, it definitely took a toll. And I remember pulling the guys together and trying to say, like, stay engaged, like, stay into what's working and stuff. And when 11,000 people and students are saying terrible things at you, it can get to you.
No, that was one of the warnings that Coach Witten had for everybody is, hey, guys, we're going into an environment where they have low glass around our bench. It's going to be chirping going on all night long. Just get used to it. Don't pay any attention to it. But that's a different environment for us. I mean, that doesn't happen here at home, and it doesn't happen very often on the road. Usually there's a lot of glass there, and nobody can get at you even verbally, and at North Dakota they can.
Yeah, in the penalty box, they had my player bio up, and they knew my mother's name, my father's name. They're making fun of me for my favorite book, like my favorite superhero. One guy told me he took my mother to the Olive Garden. Like, it was amazing. But it definitely, it didn't take me off my game, but for a second there, I was like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, you should have said to him, hey, as long as you paid, I don't care.
I didn't know what to say.
My dad probably be okay with that, too.
Yeah, and then I look up and I see my face on the giant jumbotron. I'm like, what is happening?
Yeah, that's a big-time operation. And, you know, there is a comment here tonight that some of the fans who are here with us, and I guess I appreciate that, but there's not much I can do about it, are pretty upset with Sovereign Communications for not sending Pat and me out there, but because they didn't think it was a fair broadcast back here. And, you know, I thought the guys were pretty good for the most part, although they did kind of make fun of the Lakers a few times on Saturday night after they realized they were going to get a sweep. But they had a lot to say about WCHA hockey compared to the National Collegiate Hockey Conference that was kind of taking cheap shots at us. But, you know, for the most part, it was pretty fair. It was exciting to listen to because we built that big lead on Friday night. And then Saturday night, Matt, you come out, play a really strong defensive game. I can tell by the way the game went and the scoring that the emphasis was on let's stop them and worry about offense as a secondary part of this game.
Yeah, I think our team took a huge step in the right direction. I know it didn't show on the scoreboard, but I think we became closer as a team Saturday night. Like, the systems were working. Guys were blocking shots. Guys were laying their body on the line. Like, Tori and I were talking earlier, like, man, we're getting hammered out there. Like, but, I mean, it just something clicked in the head, and I think it set the new standard of Laker hockey this year. And I think we know now how good we can truly be when we do what Coach Witten has preached to us all year, not just on and off, but I think Saturday night we're constantly good and engaged the whole game.
No, you've had some difficulty this year with some injuries. You've missed a few games. You're kind of banged up earlier, but you're back pretty much healthy right now. We do have a lot of injuries, though. We got a lot of guys who are not able to help us out right now. We lost Spratty from the looks of it on Saturday night.
Yeah, you know, I was actually right next to him when I was calling him. I called him. I told him to skate the puck up, and the guy finished his check, and I saw it. I didn't think it was that big of a hit, but when I saw Spratty come back to the bench, I could tell I had a separated shoulder too, and I knew right away from that shoulder sag that he was hurting for sure.
Yeah, it's a tough injury, especially in hockey, because there are a lot. It's a physical sport. You take a lot of hits there, and so we'll miss him for a while too. Let's go back to the dynamics here of working on your line. This has been probably as good an offensive line as the Lakers have had this season. Chris Ciotti, it was great to get him back in the lineup with the Huntsville series. He missed, I think, 3 weeks with injury himself, maybe 4 weeks. And when he came back, he scored 4 goals in 4 games and 2 in 1 game. So, you know, it's great to get a guy like that who can put the puck in the net. And that line's been pretty good all season since he returned and got in between you and Schmidt.
Yeah, I know he was absolutely dying to come back. I know when I had my little knee injury and doing rehab with him, he just, like, he felt awful that he wasn't playing and he was hungry to play. I think it showed, obviously, by the way he was scoring, the way he was going to the net. And the way he plays right now, it's like I've seen Ciotti play for a few years and this is just a whole nother level. Like, I know he worked really hard this summer on his skating and stick handling, and he's just done great things so far.
Yeah, he's been as solid a player as the Lakers have had. Good to see some guys get on the score sheet the other night, too. Chatham gets his first goal as a Laker hockey player, and Gus gets his for the season, and Nardi gets his first. Maybe those guys will start to pick it up a little bit there now with the scoring end of things. And this weekend doesn't get any easier. You go to Ferris State, it's always a tough place to play. You were there last March when we lost and couldn't play anymore, and that kind of hurts, too.
Yeah, definitely. I know they have a strong goaltender with Mott, and I know they lost a few key players, but it's just like anything else. We're going to go there, and we're going to play hard-nosed Laker hockey, I feel. And I feel really confident this weekend that we'll take it to them. I know finals will be over, and the guys can just take all the pressure off and just play hockey.
This is finals week right now.
Correct, yeah.
So you guys are going through testing right now. That puts a little different pressure on you. Have you changed up some practice times this week because of that?
Yeah. Like today we had split groups working with Mr. Fata on the ice, working with some skill stuff. So it's the finals are tough, but I mean, it's just like anything else. I know the freshmen will get used to it. We're all used to it. It's nothing too crazy.
Yeah. Now, what's your major? What are you working on academically?
Business marketing.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's a good major to get into here at Lake Superior State. And we'll go down to Ferris State this weekend with no pressure there. Then you guys get a little bit of a break. You get to go home for the holiday, but you're going to have to turn around. And I think we're all going to meet and kind of get together down in Naples, Florida. We're going to play in a tournament down there at the Everblades Arena. That'll be a fun experience. It'll be warm, but it's going to be a tough test. Good teams. Cornell, Notre Dame, Miami. No easy teams there.
Yeah, definitely. I know the break. Some guys are looking forward to it. But, I mean, we're hockey players at heart, and we want to be playing hockey, and it's nice seeing family and all that and eating dinners and all the good foods, but I think Florida will be awesome.
No, I think Florida will be awesome. You guys got to play hockey. I'll just be there watching, but I think that's going to be a good 2-3 day respite here in the middle of a tough winter. We've got another tough one going. You know, you get right back into it right after that, though. We've got to go to Mankato and play against a very good team that just shut us out twice on our own ice. We don't get to play at home again until like the second weekend in the January. That's the tough schedule this year, too. We like home games a little more than we do road games.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another test. The boys are going to be working hard, and I think we'll be fine. I know road trips get long and traveling's tough with school, but, I mean, it's just like anything else. Sacrifices will be made, and we'll be ready.
Yeah, how'd this last trip go? Another sleeper bus trip. It's a two-laner. You're going through the woods up in Minnesota. Seems like forever till you get to Grand Forks. How was the trip physically itself?
It's not bad. I mean, luckily I'm an upperclassman. I have my bunk, so I just kind of like watch a little TV and then just lay right down and go to sleep. And the next thing I know, I'm in Grand Forks, so it was pretty nice.
Yeah, that's the good thing about the sleeper bus. If you're a guy who can sleep, you can I know Paul Prouchet thinks that all trips are like 5 minutes. So.
Yeah.
But it's a tough series. North Dakota's a good team, but we talked to Coach Witten about this a few seconds ago. The last two weekends, they're not going to get any better than that for the competition. So these are good experiences for this team to grow and come together a little bit, as you just said a few minutes ago.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, playing two of the top teams in the country, it showed a lot. Like anytime you can be on the ice with first round draft picks and you can come out on the weekend either a plus or with a couple goals, like it obviously does something to the confidence. Like, hey, like, yeah, we can play with these guys. Like these guys are first round draft picks, top 20 picks. Like I know personally, like it was an experience for sure, but it gave me a little confidence boost knowing like, yeah, you know, Schmaltz was good on the point, but like I put him on his butt once or twice too. So it was cool.
Yeah, they're all, it's a physical game, and, you know, you guys are hockey players. You can hit just like they can, and I thought they were listening to those games. We could have won either one of them. We probably should have won the game Friday night. There's no way you blow a 4-1 lead late in the second period, but, hey, the game Saturday night, it was 2-1 with, like, 2 minutes to go.
Yeah, it was a tough, tough back-and-forth game. It was a lot of fun playing Saturday just because the whole game I just had this feeling like, you know, like, this is it. Like, we're going to get a break. We're going to bounce right here. But sure enough, like, questionable call. But I don't want to get back into that because I was still sulking a bit.
Yeah, well, that's a tough one when they call too many men on the ice or call delay of game penalty against you for fumbling around with an icing call. But you know, and I kind of knew that wasn't going to sit very well. That was a big question I had coming into tonight's show too. Matt, thanks for joining us here tonight. Have a Merry Christmas when you do get out of here, and enjoy this weekend at Ferris State.
Thank you. Will do.
Matt Johnson joining us here. We're going to take a break. We'll be back with more from the Antlers on ESPN 1400. Okay, we're back for our final segment of the Laker Hockey Show on Monday evening at the Antlers. And I kind of miss Chris Sabol tonight. He's not around, so we can't really tell you about too much that's going on here. They do have that Santa thing coming up on the weekends, though. So if you've got kids and you want to have your son or daughter meet with Santa Claus, you can do that on the weekends right up till the holiday hits us. We're not very far off from Christmas right now. If you've got kids, I think... very well aware of that. I know I've got grandkids, and I'm very well aware of it. So, in fact, this week we'll be going down a little bit early to go see some grandkids in some Christmas programs and then joining the Lakers at Ferris State for the Friday night series. At least that's the plan right now. And every week we ask about the same things at certain times, and it's time to talk about recruiting as far as most of us are concerned. I think a lot of the fans are very interested in how recruiting's going because they see that as being the future for the program. And I know we've got a number of young men who are ready to come in next year, but this staff impresses me with how hard you work at recruiting. It seems like there's a kid in here almost every other day.
Well, you know, we ask our players to be relentless, and I expect our staff to be relentless. You know, I mean, but I don't care where we're at, you know, and I know, you know, you look at North Dakota, I mean, I think they do a phenomenal job. I think they're a program that has a lot of advantages in terms of having the best facility in the country, but I think they do a great job. They don't take anything for granted. They hit every league. They're diligent. I mean, they've got a lot of feelers out there, and, you know, so they do a good job, and that's something. You know, doesn't matter where we're at. You know, one day we'll be sitting up here ranked in a tournament team, and we're still going to be pursuing the best players we can get that match Lake State on and off the ice. And, you know, people noticed Johnny was in here with a kid tonight and a real good player. So, yeah, we're relentless. We're relentless, and we're not real patient crew. We want to be better yesterday, and so we're going to work hard to bring in good players and guys that fit what we're trying to do. And we're excited. It's fun. You know, I really enjoy it. You know, Rich and Pete, you see those guys with these kids and the relationships they build. And, you know, I think as a head coach, you get away from that a little bit and you really miss it. I mean, you like going out. You like meeting kids and talking to coaches. And so we're on it, though. On the bus, I think, you know, we download 5-6 games to watch different kids and, you know, advisors and texts and phone calls. And so it's going well. I think the press release is out today on the kids we signed for this period. And, you know, we're not done. You're never done because you never know who becomes available or who you lose late or, you know, whatever happens. There's a lot of twists and turns in the recruiting world. And, you know, your puzzle of who you have on your roster today and maybe who's gone tomorrow or leaves early or not happy or whatever. So there's always moving pieces, and it's a pretty relentless business, and you better be on top of it if you want to be successful.
Well, it's a pretty interesting staff. I know you guys get along very well together, but it's a dynamic crew. There are strong personalities here. You and Rich Mitro and Pete Aubrey are all that same sort of personality. You like to get out and meet people. I think you probably worked with fans about as well as anybody. I know I've seen you before games down with the student section that we've created at Lake Superior State, shaking hands and thanking kids for being there. That positive stuff will come back. That's going to help.
Well, I've been around, like I mentioned, good people. You know, Rick Conley and Ron Mason, and you know, we're here to win hockey games, but we're here to build a program as well. And I think, you know, to do that, and this is a discussion my wife and I have. You know, we have a 3-year-old son, and you know, there's a lot of sacrifices. But I knew coming in, if we're going to do this right, there's going to be, you know, a lot of lonely nights for her and some patience and some understanding that there's a lot of demands on our time. But, yeah, we want to build a program. And, I mean, the people here know it and have had that success and I think crave that success. And so it takes a lot. But, you know, I love that the people are so passionate about Laker hockey. It's a great hockey community. So, you know, we love the support, and it's been fun. And again, I know we'll have some great times together and that people will be happy. And we might not be all that happy right now, but it'll come. And but that's part of building a program. I think you have to be out there and diligent in the community. And, you know, I'm kind of dying. We got in so late that we haven't done much in in schools locally, and you know, we don't have a big children's hospital or anything like that, but I think we can do a lot better job of getting our team out in the community as well, and that'll come. We'll have some time this summer to come up with some ideas that we've done in the past and do a better job out there. But and I think kids enjoy it. You know, our players enjoy getting out there and meeting kids and being around, and some of them aren't always great at it. You gotta help them a little bit grow up and mature that way. But I think building a program takes those things, and we're all willing to do it. And when you got Rich Meacher on staff, who knows everybody, and kind of the, maybe Tony's gone, so I can call Rich the real mayor of this town. So you know, he does a great job for us, and that's a big benefit.
Yeah, and those are important things. There's another aspect of things. Tell us a little bit about Engelstad itself. Now, you've been there many times in the past, but what an experience. You heard Matt there talk about what it was. He'd never experienced anything like that in all his college days. And like I said, he's a sophomore. I think he's a junior now at Lake Superior State, by the way. But it's such a Taj Mahal. I think that's why Pat and O'Neill and I want to go more than anything. We want to see that building. Well, I've never been in it.
I was shocked that we hadn't been there. I thought it was great for our kids. You know, those are the type of environments and the teams you want to play, because you want to be a championship team. So you have to play in those environments. Going down to Yost and playing in that environment and playing those teams. So, you know, we tell kids in the recruiting process, if you want to play in the best building in college hockey, go to North Dakota. I mean, that's, it's a unique building. It might be the nicest building in the NHL. You know, there's 12,000 plus people there, and it gets loud, and they're drinking beer, and they're yelling at you behind the bench. And even though it's this beautiful place with marble and all the, you know, cherry oak and whatever, it's kind of it's a little bit of a throwback crowd. You know, they'll quite spit on you.
Hey,
but they'll,
North Dakota,
yeah,
come on.
They'll cuss at you and they'll yell at you. So it's just a real great environment and a great facility. And I thought it was good. I talked to Dave at Hackstall after the game and just said, hey, you know, I think this is good for our team. We want to come back here. And he said, yeah, we'd love to have you back. So hopefully at some point it won't be, you know, however many years, 30 plus years or whatever it was again. It won't be that long. We'll get back there and we'll get you down there next time. And our fans should make a trip of that, because it's a great building to take a hockey game in.
Yeah, I think the last time the Lakers played there was 1973, I believe. And I can vaguely remember that. I wasn't involved right then, but I can remember when they went out there. And that would have been Rick Yo years as the head coach of the Lakers. But it would have been Rick Conley, I think, as head coach. But that's a long time ago. By the way, Dave Hextall was very good post-game, I thought, on Saturday night. He came on. The guys who did the game were a little bit tough on the Lakers sometimes, but Hextall was very good. He talked about how hard the Lakers worked. This is a team that, because they were kind of amazed, the announcers were, that the games were as close as they were and that their team was behind by so much on Friday night. But he said, hey, these guys come to play. They're not fooling around, and they work hard. He paid you a lot of compliments, I thought.
Well, that's good. That's to our kids. I mean, like I said, I thought Saturday was a nervous feeling after the way that game ended up and some of the challenges we laid out to our team, for their response to come in and really come together and compete. And I think Johnny talked about it, blocking shots and taking hits to make plays. I mean, that's a game after. It's almost like an NHL atmosphere. You walk out of there and we got ice bags everywhere and guys are limping. But that's what you need. Like we told our players, like, if we're going to be a good team, if we're going to be a championship level team, that's the way you feel every night. Like, that's how hard this game is. That's how much you have to compete and battle and sacrifice for your team. So again, I thought it was a great learning experience for us. Obviously you love points and you love a victory to hold on to that game Friday, but really a good lesson for our team and what it takes to be a championship team or to beat the best team in the country or where we want to get to. So there was a lot of value for us.
Got to go play a team this weekend at Ferris State that's had great success in recent seasons, hasn't won at all, but did get to the championship game a few years back. Hey, Lakers have three banners hanging in their building that Ferris State would love to have in its building, and this will be a battle this weekend. I think the guys on the Laker team are looking to get a victory, maybe even two, at Ferris State.
Well, that's the goal every weekend. They haven't come enough, and you know, Ferris isn't the only program that's jealous of those banners. There's a lot of programs across the country that would do just about anything for the banners we hang. And, you know, we're on our way back. We're getting back there, and this is just one step of it. You know, we've got to take the lessons we've learned from Mankato, the lessons we've learned from North Dakota, and apply it for 60 minutes. And it's a different, you know, you go from that building to this Ferris building that's a little bit more intimate and a little bit different feel to it, and presents some different challenges with the size of the surface. So everything happens quickly in this game, and you have to be prepared and ready to play because it's a very fast-paced game. And every shot on that's dangerous, so you really got to be dialed in.
Yeah, it's smaller building. It doesn't have seating all the way around. It's certainly not the Engelstad Arena, but Abel Glaben Ice Arena has always been a tough place to play. We'll be there this weekend. Friday and Saturday nights. Damon, thanks for another show here. It's not easy to come in and talk when you lose, but you do a good job at it.
Well, thanks, Bill. Like I said, I appreciate the support of you and the fans, and we're going somewhere, and we're on our way, and stick with us. Those of you who have a show next week?
Yes, we do.
One more.
We're here
so
next week.
We'll do well wishes and holiday and all that good stuff next week. So thanks, everybody, and hopefully we'll see some fans at Ferris.
Yeah, and thanks for everybody who's joined us here tonight. Pretty good crowd considering we lost a couple more hockey games. Fans aren't giving up on us yet. We hope you'll enjoy the broadcast this weekend. We'll have them for you on 99.5 YesFM. And until next week on Monday night, Bill Crawford for Damon Whitten and Matt Johnson. So long from the Antlers on ESPN 1400.